Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello again, Dad.
Well, hello again there, Tater.
How you doing today?
Well, I'm a little soggy. It's been raining all day long, so makes it a little bit rough.
Yeah, we had rain earlier today, but I don't know. I think we could use more of it. It's been 90-odd degrees up here in New York, and they've been sending out warnings that the power grid might go down. It stays hot.
I know what you mean. We had a heat wave here, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I went out and got flashlights yesterday just in case, because they do the rolling blackouts in my neighborhood where they'll warn you that it might happen by accident, but I'm pretty sure it's planned because it just, you know, happens when they happen to warn you about it.
Well, we don't get that. The only blackouts we get is when some yahoo runs into a telephone pole and knocks it down and takes out the electricity.
Well, that lasts a little bit longer. These usually just last a couple hours.
Yeah. Yeah. But it has been brutal. The heat has been brutal. We finished up the last weekend of the show, as you know, and man, those last 3 days, it was like being in a sauna trying to perform.
Oh, I believe that. I did my just had things to do, so the only window of time I could run yesterday was around like maybe 3. I think it was like 94, but the real feel was like 104.
Yeah.
I got my 5 miles in, but they were a sweaty 5 miles.
I believe that. Yeah, I came home a couple of days from work early so that Mom and I could walk, and we decided we were better off not walking. We wouldn't be just perspiring. We might be expiring.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, one way to historically beat the heat is to have a nice cold drink.
Well, that's true, and there's a national day of a nice cold drink coming up here really soon.
That's right. So July 10th is National Pina Colada Day.
Woo!
Yeah.
If so you love pina coladas and getting caught in the rain.
That song's going to be sung a lot on this episode, I feel like. Let's get right into it. yes, the pina colada, it's a delicious beach drink, summer drink, usually frozen drink. So we thought we'd run through the history of it. But of course, first, as always, what is it? Well, a pina colada is rum, usually white rum, pineapple juice, coconut cream. Sometimes there's some heavy cream thrown in there as well. It's blended over ice, can be shaken, but usually it's blended, and garnished with a pineapple wedge and usually a cherry as well. It is served in, if you've ever seen like a hurricane glass, you know, the little curvy glass, it's traditionally served in a slightly smaller one of those called a poco grande, but, you know, you can also get it in a plastic cup. Had it that way plenty of times.
Well, that's true. Or something fancy.
And there are little, you know, variations on it that I've seen to kind of finesse it a bit. A little bit of lime juice, a little bit of bitters. Both work really well in the drink.
I can tell you this. One of the best ones I ever had is when we were staying in Louisville. And they pretty much, when you're in Louisville, they replace most every drink, whatever the base spirit is, with bourbon. And so I had a pina colada made with bourbon instead of rum. And I tell you what, it was good. It kind of like changed the whole sweetness factor of it.
Well, that seems like that is a sin against a pina colada, given its history. But I'm sure, if you like it, you like it.
You know, when in Rome, do like the Romans, or when in Kentucky, do like the Kentuckians.
I guess so. So the idea of the pina colada, if we trace it back to its earliest attribution, is to a Puerto Rican pirate, actually, Roberto Cofresi. a rather famous pirate with a very colorful legacy. If you're into pirate history, you should look him up, because he's got a lot of good stories. But a lot of these stories paint him as sort of a Robin Hood of Puerto Rico. He was alive during the Spanish colonial era and the Latin American Wars of Independence. So he was born in 1791, active in the early 1800s. And he was born to nobility, but they lost their wealth due to the ongoing political struggles. So the stories say that he shared his pillaged wealth with the needy and claimed that he never lifted a hand to a fellow Puerto Rican. So other more wilder stories attribute a sort of supernatural power to him. Some claim that he practiced witchcraft or made a deal with the devil, and that his fiery soul still appears to those who get too close to his buried treasure, which is, you know, supposedly all around Puerto Rico. But in any case, when he was finally captured and put to death, his reported last words were, "I have killed hundreds with my own hands, and I know how to die. Fire!" So, a badass.
Yeah.
And somewhere, along with all of his benevolence and badassery, he mixed up a new style of grog for his crew, which was made of rum, coconut milk, and pineapple. And, you know, so the legend goes, it was so good that it could put down mutiny on board.
Yeah, make us more of that grog and we won't mutiny.
I know, right? If it was only that easy. But now, you know, of course, grog was a common concept at this time. Basically some combo of acid, sugars, water, fruit, booze that would be used to keep crews hydrated and not too tipsy. And of course, grog comes from the earlier concept of punch, which had been around for centuries prior and consisted of putting, you know, whatever local booze, spice, sugar, and fruit you had into a mix to keep you cool. So, you know, the concept would have been there. But the connection between Cofresi and the modern idea of a piña colada is sort of a legend with no real documented connection there. But, you know, it's easy to believe that at the time, he and other Puerto Ricans would have been mixing readily available ingredients in Puerto Rico, such as rum, pineapple, and coconut.
Absolutely. Yeah. That would just make sense. What's available?
Yeah.
Rum, coconut, and pineapples. Well, let's throw it together in a glass.
Exactly. Now, hopping forward about a century after Cofresi's death in 1825 to 1922, something very close to the piña colada is popularized in Cuba, along with the birth of Bacardi rum. This has led some to propose that the drink might have existed in Cuba before Puerto Rico. And while this 1922 version does have white rum and pineapple, it lacks coconut. And another important scientific discovery that had yet to come that is, I think, necessary to a true piña colada. And that is going to take us back to Puerto Rico. Also, I think it's worth noting that while blenders were invented in the 1920s, they weren't really readily available for, like, you know, in that decade. So a blended piña colada probably did not take place in Cuba in the early 1920s. Now, in 1954, thanks to a government grant, there was a professor who worked at the University of Puerto Rico by the name of Ramon Lopez Irizarry, and he had this idea to research a more efficient way to extract coconut cream from the coconut. So through a lot of experimentation, he developed this way of blending the cream and the coconut hearts and introducing sugar into the mix to get the proper consistency to sort of replicate the cream taste when it's in its pure form. And it resulted in this very sweet, flavorful, and very stable coconut cream. Now, he realized that he had a $1 million product on his hands, so he left the university for manufacturing. He started selling his patented Coco Lopez, which was what he named it, coconut cream in 1954 throughout Puerto Rico. He would eventually sell the brand in 66, which would lead to its eventual acquisition by Borden, of course, massive conglomerate, and that would lead to its distribution worldwide. For his part, the professor retired a multimillionaire and lived happily with his wife and his four kids, having contributed to the bar world a beloved ingredient, still very much available today, that would give the piña colada its final missing ingredient.
Wow, he really played his cards right, and they still have Coco Lopez today, because I've used that quite often with my piña coladas.
Yeah, no, it's still pretty standard. And I mean, it's delicious stuff. It's just, you can't sub it in for coconut milk. Don't make that mistake. But it's very sweet. It's kind of more like condensed milk.
That's why they said you couldn't really count the pirate as the father of the pina colada because he used coconut milk. And so that wasn't really a real pina colada.
Yes.
As we know it.
So the same year Coco Lopez was released, it found its way behind the Carib Hilton's Beachcomber Bar in San Juan, where two co-workers and bartenders claim creation of what is the modern pina colada. Now, first, there is Ramon Monchito Marrero. So his story goes, he was commissioned by the hotel to create the signature drink. And he spent months perfecting what he dubbed the pina colada, which translated simply to strained pineapple. There was also Ricardo Garcia, who was also working at the Beachcomber Bar. And he claimed that same year he stumbled into the pina colada by accident after a drink he was making with Coco Lopez coconut water and rum that was served in a coconut shell. So basically during service, he ran out of fresh coconuts. So he subbed in pineapple juice and hollowed out pineapples, thus introducing the pineapple to the Coco Lopez and rum concoction and birthing the pina colada through just necessity. But in either case, the bar itself was rewarded a plaque as the recognized birthplace of the drink in 2004. So, you know, kind of similar as before, that these ideas were there. It was just somebody laid claim to them. Two bartenders working at the same bar the year Coco Lopez comes out and pairing it with pineapple and rum, very simply, it makes sense that they both might have had the idea.
Yeah, or one of them was kind of tinkering around and said, hey, what do you think of this? And the other one tried it, and then, you know, maybe they made a little bit of a change or something like that, but it probably came originally from just one of them with the idea.
Now, there is one other claim that was made in 1963 at an old San Juan restaurant, Barachina. The owner of the same name worked out the recipe with the bartender, Ramon Portas Mignot, there. And their recipe does mention a blender and the fruit garnish, and they did hang their own plaque commemorating them as the birthplace of the pina colada. But the consensus in modern times is that they may have evolved the drink, perhaps kind of encapsulated in its modern form, but the pina colada was already at the Beachcomber Bar by that time. So probably not the birthplace. You know, like most cocktail stories, I think many things can be true at once. A convenient new ingredient released to the market, several bartenders decided to do a smart, simple drink with it, and we didn't have the internet, so no one could know if someone had done the exact same thing that way before.
You didn't have Google to refer to.
Exactly. Now, the pina colada caught on in North America, dominated beach bars in Hawaii and Miami, and was declared the national drink of Puerto Rico in 1978. The same year that sales of the drink at the Caribe surpassed 3 million. A year later, in 1979, British-American singer Rupert Holmes released the catchy song Escape, better known as the Pina Colada song, which climbed to the top of the Billboard Hot 100 charts. So, of course, the song that you led the episode with.
It really is a very catchy song, too. It had everybody singing it. Everybody loved that song.
Yeah. But, well, everybody but perhaps Rupert Holmes himself, he was noted as kind of later expressing contempt for it because it detracted from his more serious music and that he wasn't really a fan of the drink itself, that he thought it was a little too sweet, a little too processed. It's not hard to believe that, I mean, we're moving into the 80s here, so that's the decade where proper bartending went to die. You know, long gone were the days of fresh squeezed pineapple juice, local rum, you know, a few nuanced drops of lime or bitters, complementing that Coco Lopez and cream. Popularity that brought the pina colada into the new decade would curse it with the association with poorly made versions and ready mixes that the 80s had to offer. So maybe he just had a few bad pina coladas.
Or maybe he just got tired of everywhere he went, people would say, Rupert, sing the pina colada song.
Yeah.
And he's like, look, I've got three other damn albums. Don't you want a song? No, we just want the pina colada song.
Maybe, you know, he mentioned champagne in that song too, but I bet nobody ever bought him champagne. I bet it was just pina coladas all the time.
Well, the main thing that got me about the song is if you really listen to it, the other parts of it and closer, both of them were trying to cheat on the other one, so I'm not so sure that sets a very good example for couples everywhere.
The song is kind of weird as a romantic song, right? Because, they were trying to seek out other partners, and then they rediscovered each other. And I guess this was like, oh, great, we were right for each other all along. but let's both forget that we just tried to cheat.
Yeah, I mean, it's like instead of talking to each other, you seek comfort in the classified ads. I mean, they didn't even have dating, computer dating then. You're talking about putting an ad in the paper and somebody reading it. I mean, what are your chances there of finding a better partner?
I don't know. I mean, and it's not like they were, you know, trying to seek out some freaky stuff. They just pina coladas, champagne, and I don't know, rainstorms. You could have just said that to your partner.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, yeah, that wasn't that big of a commitment there. Hey, you ever had a pina colada? You want one?
You know, so it's good to experiment in a relationship, right? Mix things up. Try a pina colada every now and then so your spouse doesn't seek out a pina colada drinker to cheat on you with.
Yeah, that's right.
But, of course, with the classic cocktail movement, there has come a reassessment of many drinks that were deemed, you know, not tenable in the 70s and 80s. And along with that, of course, the pina colada. Many high-end bars offer clever riffs off the original. You can get shaken varieties that are really solid, or just simple, well-made, classic, frozen pina coladas.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I would like to try a shaken one. Just like margaritas can be frozen or shaken or poured over ice, you know. I've had those before, but I've never... I don't think I've ever had anything except a frozen pina colada.
I can't say I've ever had a shaken pina colada either. The idea definitely appeals to me more. I don't really like frozen drinks. You know, some of the science of frozen drinks that we've talked about before is you have to add so much sugar because the cold and the contact with ice on your tongue, you don't taste things that are as sweet. So you do have to drive up the sugar level to have a frozen cocktail taste palatable. So I would be curious of a non-frozen pina colada, because in general, I find pina coladas too sweet. But I think you could play a little bit more with that sweetness level if you had it shaken.
I saw where one of the recipes called for Angostura bitters. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's to cut that sweetness factor some. And probably you just don't add as much of like the Coco Lopez or things like that, you know?
Yeah, well, that's a lot of the places that cut in either heavy cream or coconut cream or coconut milk to cut in with the Coco Lopez. And then, as I mentioned, bringing in some acid, like some pure acid from like lime juice is pretty common. And a lot of times you'll get like a whole layer of Ango sitting on top. Even when it's frozen, they'll put that on top, which I think is nice. But definitely a good, you know, with the heat wave, I think if you want the frozen version, that is fine.
That's true. I'd just be curious in trying one like that, because I do kind of, I've moved more towards, you know, not frozen margaritas, and so I'd kind of like to try the not frozen pina colada too.
Well, and also, you know, mixing it up on the rum, of course, it became associated with white rum because you have Bacardi's expansion throughout, you know, Cuba. It sets up shop in Puerto Rico as well in the 70s and the 50s, I guess. But you have this Bacardi white rum so deeply associated with a lot of these cocktails from this era, and really, the best pina coladas that I've had have factored in some dark rum. So usually like you mix white rum and dark rum, or you go all dark rum, or you mix some Agricole with some funky Jamaican rum. So blending your rums in a more creative way, in a more exciting way in a pina colada is another good way to kind of kick it up a notch while still respecting the original recipe.
Well, maybe we can do that on the video, is try some different versions of it.
I think that sounds like a good idea. We'll make a classic. Well, maybe we'll do a blended and a shaken over there on the video. A little bit of a brief history. But, you know, started possibly on a pirate ship and now available at beach bars all around the world.
And then you had two bartenders working at the same place at the same time fighting over, I did it. No, I did it. No, it was mine. I got my name on it.
And then some other guy a decade later said, nah, I just made it. It was me.
Yeah. But it seems odd that it'd go from the 1800s all the way to 1952 before anybody thought to put that together again.
Well, like I said, I don't think people didn't think to put it together. I think that people had been combining coconut, pineapple, and rum in lots of different ways. It's just, we don't really get this concept of cocktail culture as you make drinks you name them specific things, you claim them, you put recipes in books. That was a concept that proliferated in the, you know, 20s and 30s in America and then spread to a lot of areas during Prohibition. So a lot of this was just cementing recipes that people have been drinking for decades, if not centuries, with attaching a name and a birthplace to them. So,
yeah, I guess that's true. Like, we talked about all the homemade rum that was being made in Puerto Rico. And, you know, that they probably had lots of family recipes and things that they made, but they never thought about it. Hey, I need to trademark this. You know, they just, this is what we drink. We didn't name it anything.
Yeah. That moment of that aha moment of, oh, wait, we should like write all this down. And like,
yeah, you
know, took a minute, but all right.
The pina colada popped up in two other pop culture moments. Chuck Maggione. Have you ever heard of him?
No.
He did a lot of classical music, and he did instrumentals. They didn't sing. Chuck Maggione albums were all instrumentals, but he did a song, and it's kind of funny that it was the same time as Rupert Holmes, but he did a song in 1979 called Pina Colada, but it was just an instrumental, I guess. Mm. And then also Garth Brooks had a song that was called Two Pina Coladas.
Yeah.
Not in 1979. It was much later.
Well, there's also a quote attributed to Joan Crawford that when she first tasted the pina colada at the Beachcombers Bar, she claimed it was better than slapping Betty Davis in the face.
that good.
That's pretty messed up.
Well, you know that there was a lot back in the Prohibition days, there was a lot of people traveling to Cuba, you know, to drink because they could drink in Cuba and stuff. And that was kind of like a party place for the rich and famous to go. And they said that a lot of the movie stars of the day, like including John Wayne, went down there and enjoyed pina coladas.
Sure.
So, I mean, that was a popular thing to go down and do.
Yeah. Well, so there you go. Well,
I saw two of them, other recommendations that looked pretty interesting. One was an amaretto colada, where you substitute amaretto for the rum. And the other was a Kahlua colada. That's hard to say.
Those sound very sweet. I don't think I like the idea of either of those.
You don't, huh?
No, you don't have a base spirit anymore. You've just added more sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds good to me. Yeah. I like sweet.
Yeah, I know you do.
That's why my teeth keep breaking, though.
Okay, well... Well, hey, so as Dad mentioned over on the video, I think that's a great idea. We'll try to shake in. We'll try a classic blended. Nothing too crazy, nothing too outlandish. Just stick with the basics. And yeah, so check us out over there. Thank you, Dad, for joining me.
Well, thank you, Tay, for having me. I enjoyed discussing this icy, delicious, coconutty drink.
Yeah, I'd say this is right up your alley.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, you got a little bit of time. So by the time this episode goes up, you'll still have plenty of days to get together your stuff if you want to celebrate Pina Colada Day on the 10th of July. There you go.
No reason not to. With a heat wave and an icy drink, they just go together.
There you go. If you'd like to reach out to us on social media, have any questions or comments, we are neatthebooscast at gmail.com. We are neatboozcast on Twitter and Instagram. And you can also support us on our Patreon. We have one of those. We have fun rewards, some videos and stuff. Check us out there. As always, I have been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been...
Me. I have been getting caught in the rain a lot lately because we've had these downpours here, so that's what was happening all day today. I wonder if that was a coincidence that we were going to record the Pina Colada episode and I got caught in the rain.
I don't know. I think we could all use some rain. We need some getting caught in the rain and a Pina Colada and some champagne.
And the taste of champagne.
Yes. All these things.